Welcome to the SUSS series of podcasts, where we explore ideas, solutions, and collaborations that are making a difference in the lives of individuals, families, communities, and beyond. This series features guests who will discuss how we can achieve social impact for the greater good, no matter how big or small.
Hi, I'm Cynthia, and welcome to the podcast. As a child, I spent half a year growing up on a farm. And with rose-tinted lenses, I can't begin to tell you the number of times I've daydreamed about giving up the stresses of city life and escaping to some fantasy of a simpler countryside. But since 2010, more people in the world live in urban settings than rural settings. And why not, right? Because urban city living has so many conveniences. We're served by a huge sprawl of apartments, hotels, restaurants, mega factories, and retail malls. But it's these very conveniences that many of us have come to realize both contribute to and have become threatened by global climate change. Excessive fuel dependency and a growing demand for energy and materials among cities. This environment that humans have built around us is both part of the problem as well as the solution. So the issue of sustainability in our built environment becomes a really critical one. And this is where we're really excited to have our guest, Dr. Sheila Conejos from SUSS School of Science and Technology, to come in to share her expertise. Thanks for joining us, Sheila.
It's my pleasure, Cynthia. Thanks for having me too. By the way, your story is quite relatable and it's very interesting.
You're the perfect person for today's chat because not only are you the head of program at the School of Science and Technology, but you're also an architect and an urban planner as well. We hear a lot about sustainability, but we very seldom hear it discussed in the domain of built environment. So could you please explain built environment in a manner that's simple to understand?
I'll start with the built environment. Yeah. So built environment refers to man-made structures and its surroundings. So it ranges from the building itself, parks and open spaces, and then it goes to neighborhoods and townscape or even cities.
Great. And how about the connection between sustainability and built environment?
That's a good question, actually, because like the built environment has become a central concern in addressing sustainability because the building sector is considered a major contributor for total greenhouse gas emissions. And it consumes up to 40% of all the energy worldwide. So while 40% of our landfill waste comes from building materials, the construction sector consumes about 60% of our resources and even produces 50% of the waste itself.
So what you're saying is that by making changes in our built environment, we could actually affect up to a third or more of global greenhouse gases, energy, resource consumption, and waste generation?
The 3R strategy wherein we reuse, recycle, and reduce has been applied in the built environment sector. For instance, when we're applying recycling and reuse, building construction waste can be minimized. And also the embodied energy of the materials are retained. So whenever we reuse products instead of producing new ones, then the energy are saved and also the resources were also saved.
I see. It's interesting. I think what you're saying is that the built environment presents a really huge potential for impact on sustainability. So it sounds like the built environment creates many issues, but it also presents vast opportunities, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. If we, sustainability designers, follow our responsibilities in maintaining or considering sustainability in our design, then somehow we'll be able to integrate these concepts of sustainability, maintainability, adaptability, and circularity in our design projects right at the outset.
Yeah, interesting. These are issues that a task force or a government white paper alone won't be able to solve, right? So what kind of assumptions do we need to drop when we consider how cities function?
Well, we really have to abandon the traditional way of looking at an economy. So in a traditional linear economy, a natural resource is turned into a product and it ultimately becomes a waste once its life cycle is completed. However, in a circular economy, resources are being kept for as long as possible and then the maximum value is extracted and from these resources whilst they are still in use and then products and materials are recovered and regenerated from the resources at the end of their life. So when we're talking about circular economies, it is more a greener alternative since it is a model of production and consumption. It really involves reusing, repairing, refurbishing, and recycling existing materials that helps to extend the life cycle of products and even minimize waste. So this can be associated also in terms of like how we generate a greener and sustainable future here in Singapore. Maybe we can do it by changing the way we build and manage our environment along with changing the way we design. This is much more holistic approach where sustainability is considered as its core, where nothing becomes waste and everything has value.
I think I know what you mean. My oven died the other day and I brought it to a repair kopitiam and the good volunteers there taught me how to fix it. So the life of the oven is extended and it's saved from the incinerator. But, you know, now that I can bake again, I probably need to save my waistline instead. But it's a small contribution individuals can make to helping Singapore move towards a circular economy. But moving back to the built environment, how do you relate a circular economy to the context of the built environment in here in Singapore?
It's quite interesting to know that you have your oven repaired and then, yeah, you're still using it. And that's really a way of encouraging other people to be more resource efficient. Thank you for that. So in relation to the built environment, we can design flexible and dynamic spaces wherein we try to anticipate the longevity of the building itself. And thereby, we avoid demolishing the building or even replacing it, and then we generate less wastage. This type of strategy that I'm talking about is upcycling the built environment. When I say upcycling the built environment, it is more putting more value of the building, the existing building that we're trying to recycle. So it's not more like undervaluing it, but you're trying to raise its value to a higher level. So the reason why I'm talking about upcycling the built environment, because there are some design considerations that can be applied in doing this type of strategy. So whenever I talk about these design strategies, they're also, as I mentioned before, it incorporates sustainability, maintainability, adaptability, and circularity right at the design stage. So if we consider these 4L design principles, then our designers and practitioners in the built environment will be able to manage the buildings well and let them perform well and even extend their lifespan.
What are these 4L principles that you speak about?
Okay, I will discuss it briefly. So I will start with number one, long life. I consider it as design for durability and design for maintainability. So long life refers to how durable, resilient, and maintainable a building is. So for instance, if we monitor these indicators in a building, it's more of like trying to provide or conduct routine inspection check of our building so that there will be no structural or material issues. For instance, like defects, no? We can prevent defects because like Singapore is a mostly high-rise buildings, right? So there are always problems, of course, like falling facades that sometimes it also destroy properties and even, of course, harm the public. It is deterrent to public safety. And so that's the reason why we really have to consider these principles. So for instance, the design for maintainability and durability has been integrated in Singapore way back in 1989. And that was the Construction Quality Assessment System. We call it CONQAS. It is considered as the national standard for assessing the quality of building projects here in Singapore. I know you're much familiar with Singapore, right? So there was the time that this was triggered because of a certain building has collapsed. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are some casualties. So it is like the right time or a warning for Singapore that they really wanted to build quality buildings.
I see.
Yeah. In addition to this, we also have the maintainability of facility standard, which is the first of its kind globally. This is something like a benchmark for quality buildings also in Singapore. It also introduced quality of design, construction, and maintenance practices so that buildings could be highly maintainable.
Mm.
And the second design principle that I'm talking about is loose fit. So I called it like design for adaptability and reuse. So when we're talking about loose fit, it measures how flexible and adaptable a building is and its reuse potential. So we're talking about how buildings can be adapted into other uses. Of course, I'm sure you're quite familiar how designated buildings or heritage buildings with cultural historical significance are being reused into appropriate functions, or just like the National Gallery of Singapore, which consists of two national monuments, the former Supreme Court building and over the City Hall. These buildings were adaptively reused into appropriate uses, right? I said appropriate uses because sometimes there are buildings that aren't reused in an appropriate way. Sure. For instance, it could be a church turned into a bar or something. There's some example here. It's a good example. Chimes was a good one. But then in one of my research, there's one case study that really provoked public opinion because it was a really historical church and then it was turned into a bar by the owners. But then later on, they were being stopped and then there was these guidelines that, okay, we can also use principles of reversibility. So in that way, they were still able to turn it back into a church. So I was thinking about that principles of reversibility is very flexible. So there's also one example that I can relate to, which I really like. This is a best practice because like it is a church turned into a house. Now, wow. This time it is an appropriate use because there in that house, you can still see the altar or the pulpit. But then it was really reused like as a reading area or lounge of the owner. And then again, principles of reversibility was applied. Meaning the owner or any institution would like to turn it back to its original function, then it can be done. It still can be transformed again into a church.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So that's the loose feet principle.
So we have gone through two of the L principles, long life, and then the second one, loose fit. And so what are 3 and 4?
3 is the most practiced principle here in Singapore. So we're talking about low energy. So it's more like design for energy efficiency. And we all know that Singapore is leading this initiative here in Asia.
Great to hear that.
Yeah. It's good to know. But that's the reason why that's part of the Green Building Master Plan, where 80% of the building should be green by 2030. And the last one is beyond life cycle, where I called it design for disassembly. So this is the concept where building materials and components are broken down, reused, and repurposed when their life cycle ends. And then this minimizes waste and also reduces environmental footprint. Currently practiced in Singapore is the design for manufacturing and assembly. With this concept, design for manufacturing and disassembly, if we integrate the concept of disassembly, then the prefabricated building components assembled on site may have a chance to be disassembled and reused again, maybe in another future, wow. Another site. For instance, when I was studying in Australia, our building is considered a global excellence leader in terms of green building. And also, I was introduced about disassembly in there and even reuse, because some of the materials used in that new building actually came from recycled materials, wow. For example, recycled wood. And that was the ones used for the flooring for our second floor. And in fact, we don't use nails, but also pegs.
Interesting. Thanks so much for explaining the 4L principles. So long life, loose fit, low energy and beyond life cycle. Got it. And thanks for explaining how it contributes to the transition to a circular economy as well.
You've been listening to the SUSS series of podcasts. The next part of this episode will be available at suss.edu.sg/podcast. Stay tuned.